you are suffering from imposter syndrome, you're probably doing something right. The future of mankind is dependent on us taking ourselves out of our natural comfort zones. So if we're stretching ourselves to do something that's a little bit more radical than we're comfortable with, we're actually pushing the boundaries.
Hello, and welcome to the Art of Selling Online Courses. We are here to share winning strategies and secret hacks from top performers in the online course industry. My name is John Ainsworth, and today's guest is Quentin Crowe. Quentin is an award-winning marketer, educator, and business coach with over 30 years marketing experience. He's trained more than 5,000 marketers, representing over 1,000 brands in 9 different countries. And in 2022, he founded Q-Co, a community of executives who don't identify with traditional pale, male, and stale business establishments. Q-Co's mission is to help all leaders suffering from self-doubt to unleash their hidden potential. I've always described him to people as my marketing professor. He was the guy who was like, he ran the marketing college that I went to when I first started learning about marketing a long time ago. So today we're going to be chatting with Quentin about how to create amazing courses, the 4 different learning styles, how to cater for them in your courses, and the concept of spikes and loops, and how it's going to keep people engaged in your training. Now, before we dive into our interview with Quentin, I've got an important question for you. Do you own a course or authority website? And if you do, did you know there's a short list of techniques that can help you double to quadruple your revenue? There's 8 techniques my team uses to help online course creators grow their revenue. And the average rate of return from using them is 486%. So if you want to find out which of these 8 techniques you're not currently using and how they can help you scale your income, go to pimpyourfunnel.com. And on that page, you can access a short 10-question survey. After you fill it out, my team is going to create a personalized profit increase report for you. And we're going to show you how much you can increase your revenue with each of those techniques individually and then overall together. And we'll show you which one to start first with. We'll show you how much each technique can grow your business. And we're also going to link to other training from each of those. So go to pimpyourfunnel.com, fill in the short survey, get your report, and discover how you might be able to 5x your revenue as well. Quentin, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much, John. It's lovely to see you.
Very pleased to have you here. So one of the things, there's a lot of things that you're very knowledgeable about. One of the things is around how people can make amazing training. And a lot of people who got into online course creation got into it because they're an expert in a topic. Now, that might be home recording studios or dog training or language learning or whatever. It's not necessarily because they're an expert in teaching. They've probably been teaching this stuff in person before, but they might not have studied all of that. So what's some of the ways that people learn, the course creators who are listening to this, should take into account when they're putting their courses together?
I think it's lots of interesting things to unpick here, John. And the first is really understanding that we all learn differently. And I think back to, I mean, you made me feel very old in the introduction. But
I'm sorry.
I was sort of thinking, I went back to...
like, that was ages ago, and he was all, yeah.
But actually, it all started for me at university. And back in the day, we used to have a lecturer, normally a professor, you met reference a professor, hopefully I did a better job than ones that I used to have. And they used to stand in front of an auditorium and basically talk at us for an hour. And we'd scribble notes along. We'd then read their book and then go into an exam at the end of the year, regurgitate everything they told us. There was nothing that was relevant or useful from that whole process other than getting a piece of paper at the end of it and say, congratulations, you've got a degree. I think one of the key things that I've learned after that was this sort of realization that I have a different bias to learning to you. So if I'm creating a course, what I have to be very mindful of is that I don't create it in a way that appeals specifically to me. We're also, I think we've all got familiar with neuro-linguistic programming, so NLP, and it has 3 key dimensions. So some people are very visual, some people are auditory, and some people are kinesthetic. And going back all those years to that professor, he was clearly very auditory. This was pre-PowerPoint, it's that old, so there wasn't anything in terms of visual. And certainly kinesthetic, the touchy-feely, engaging with the content was totally non-existent. So that's fine. We have to be aware of that. And for your online community who are creating these fantastic courses, I'm sure they're all cognizant of those three main ideas. I think what's possibly a little bit more nuanced, though, is understanding our learning styles, how we absorb information. Now, there's plenty of frameworks out there. And I think one of the most useful ones is developed by Honey and Mumford. And they identified four key learning styles, and I'll quickly run through them. The first are the theorists. So going back to the academic world, they love theory. But actually what theorists want is not just pure academic theory for the knowledge of it. It is more, has this concept been thoroughly tested? Is it robust? Has it got legitimacy? Has it been peer reviewed? So if you're sharing some new content, maybe it's something that you've created yourself, you have to establish some authority with your audience to say, look, this is legitimate. So those are your first group, your theorists. The second group are pragmatists. They're almost at the other end of the spectrum. And I did a lot of work training people in the building construction space. Now, you can imagine they really didn't want to know about the theory at all. They wanted to know, okay, what's the practical reality? Is this going to make my life, my job easier to do? So again, at the start of any session, you've got to make it very clear, look, this is how it's going to impact you. This is how it's going to upskill you. This is how it's going to add more value to your bottom line. This is how it's going to enhance a particular skill. So those are your pragmatists. Then we come on to two, I find, a little bit more nuanced and interesting areas. And the next group are activists. So activists learn by doing, and they tend to be quite kinesthetic. Now, I'm very much in that field. So if you're running a session, even if it's online, you've got to allow people to engage and do things. So we'll come onto it possibly in a little bit more detail later on. But one simple technique is to have step-by-step guides. So if you've given them a workbook or something to follow, they can actually engage with it, ideally with a pen and paper. If you're ever in a live event, you can spot the activists because they've always got a pen and they're scribbling like crazy. And then finally, you've got the reflectors. Now, again, in the world that your community operate in, this is almost a given, where you need time and space to literally digest what you have learned. Now, on an online course, that's easy. You've actually innately created that environment. But if you're running even a live course, you've got to give certain people the time to actually let it sink in. So when you're structuring any type of course, if you've got that in mind, those four key groups, and in particular, if you can actually download from the Honey and Mumford, we can send a link afterwards, but you can actually do a session for yourself and you can identify your own area of weakness. So I know, for example, that I have to really focus on the pragmatist because that is not my sort of natural bias. So that's a sort of starting point of learning styles. As you can probably realize, I can talk endlessly about it.
Okay. So what we've got so far, there's a couple of ways you can think about how people learn. One we've talked about was visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. So you need to have all three of those. And it sounds like there's some crossover, like these aren't completely exclusive, you know.
These aren't mutually exclusive concepts.
Yeah. So you've got to have sound, you've got to have something visual, and you've got to have something for people to do. So, and some people will tend more towards one than the other. Some people will more want the visual side of it. Some will more want to be active involved. But you think a better model is the one from Honey Mumford, which covers theorists, reflectors, activists, and pragmatists. Theorists are trying to understand, is the theory definitely 100% like robustly proven? Is it peer reviewed? This kind of thing. The pragmatist wants to understand the details of how it works. How does it actually tie into the real world? How's it going to affect the bottom line? The activists are kind of kinesthetic. They learn by doing. They have to engage and do things, workbook, pen and paper. And the reflectors are the ones who need time and space to digest what you've learned. I assume that within that, you'll tend to have a bit of all four of them, but it'll be more of one or more of another. Is that how it tends to work?
These aren't mutually exclusive, John.
Yeah.
So if you do the test, you'll get a score out of 20 for those four different dimensions. And you'll identify that score. So I know, for example, on activism, I tend to score around 17 to 19, depending on the test, out of 20.
Wow.
But what I would suggest as well for appealing to the pragmatists here, if you're structuring a program and you're introducing some sort of framework, so obviously when we were working together all those years ago, there was mostly, I think, three-letter acronyms that we worked in. 4Ps, 7Ps, all the rest of it. But if you set it up and say, look, this is what we're going to teach you. This is why it's useful.
Mm-hmm.
You do the pragmatism fairly early on. You then support it with some theoretical underpinning. So, yeah, this has been peer reviewed or is in this Harvard Business Review or whatever it might be to actually give it some substance. Then you break it down. So you deconstruct it. So it becomes sort of step by step. That really appeals to the activists. And then you give time afterwards for people to reflect and think about actually what they're doing.
All right. So start off pragmatist early on. So that means something like maybe here's why this thing is important. Here's how it connects back to your job or your life or whatever it is you're trying to achieve. Here's how it's going to work. This is what's going to be different in your life after you've done this. Then the theory. So here's the overall concept. Here's how this works. Here's why, you know, we've done a bunch of testing of this. We've run it 37 times and we found this, and we did this survey and we did this poll, and like all the data that you got. Then, okay, this is how you actually do it. Step one, step two, step three. So maybe the theory stuff, I guess, would also include, here's the big picture idea of how this works. Like here's the overall kind of concept. Then the step-by-step, do this, then do this, then do this, then do this. And then, right, now go and think about it a bit and then come back and do the homework or whatever the next kind of step is after that. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's a perfect summary, John. Yeah, it's really good. Okay. You're always a good student.
Like if someone has got that in mind, right? They're like, okay, I've now got this model, pragmatism theory, the activist, then the reflector. I'm going to go through and put my courses together in that order. Are there other levels to this? Like what I'm thinking, for example, is you could do this at a module level, but you could also maybe do this at an entire course level. You know, you could have an intro and then a final step at the end of the course. Like what's some ways that people can put this into their courses?
I think you're spot on. Just to deconstruct what you're saying, if you are creating a scheme of work for an entire program, again, if you're selling that at the outset as a product, you've effectively, going to marketing speak, you're creating a value proposition very early on. So you're looking at the overall thing. Okay, who's it appealing to? How's it going to benefit them? What are going to be the outcomes? And then you can say, look, you're going to be covering these elements, these core components. So it's a 6-7-step process. The second part of your question there was then actually, how can you incorporate it within the actual delivery? I think it's a question of repetition. I wouldn't say it's an absolute. I wouldn't do it absolutely every time because it will start to feel a little bit repetitive. But you know, learning as much as anything else is the act of repetition and reinforcing the information. Tell them what you're going to tell them what you told them. So I think as a general principle, it's a very useful tool, a very useful thing to have in your mind as to how you actually structure something.
Okay. So maybe not always use this, but as a general rule, have this in mind of how you're going to share information with people, like whenever you're putting together the module, maybe like do it at the high level and then do it at the smaller level as well when you're doing each lesson or each module or something like that.
We've got a few other suggestions to come back to as the discussion progresses, I hope. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's, you can use it even for, you know, like a 6-minute session. If it's really that short, a bit of learning, you can still use those core principles. Really at the other end of the spectrum, I've just developed a 6-day leadership training program. And we use exactly that principle to structure the whole thing and then create the value proposition to sell it into the client.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. All right, let's come at this from a different angle then. Another thing that I know that you use as a way to put training together and make sure it's engaging is the idea of spikes and loops. So can you talk us through what that is?
Yeah, so spikes and loops, at the start of a session, you need to grab the attention. If you haven't grabbed the attention, you've lost them. So, you know, again, one of the acronyms that we learned all those years ago, this sort of AIDCA framework, mm-hmm. You know, awareness, interest, desire, conviction and action. That is a framework which is quite useful. But what you're trying to do is you've got to grab the attention at the outset. So you can do that in a number of different ways. It could be a startling statistic. It could be a thought-provoking quotation. It could be the start of an interesting story. So you teed up today, so, you know, way back when, you know, I was one of your trainers when you were doing your professional qualifications. You set up a bit of a story there. Now, the loop bit is effectively what all great comedians do, all great storytellers do, is that they'll close it and they'll circle back to the original idea. And it creates that lovely sort of warm, fuzzy feeling. And you think some of the really great comedians, I think of Billy Connolly, you might not agree to quite the same extent, but Michael McIntyre, these sort of shaggy dog storytellers, they are absolutely genius at it. So you think, oh, they've gone off on a tangent. Oh, they've gone. And then they beautifully bring it back full circle at the end. And we're left with this sort of this feeling. Oh, yeah, I'm in good hands. They've actually looked after me on this journey. And they've brought me back to a safe space. And the same applies actually for training. So this sort of idea of a spike, grab their attention. Actually, what happens in the middle is it obviously it's important, but they're only going to remember, you know, 3 weeks later, probably one thing. But you need to make sure your spike, what you grab them, reinforces that one idea. And then the loop comes back and then reinforces it again and leaves that sort of nice holistic feeling. So spikes and loops, really important point of any type of presentation or, in this instance, training program.
And this is like, I mean, this is an idea, right, that's been around in storytelling for a very long time. This isn't a new concept. It's just something that marketers and trainers don't necessarily always use. And so if you look at a soap opera, a TV show, then they'll have the cliffhanger at the end. And then you go, oh, but I want to know what happens next. And so that's the open loop. And you kind of like, right, I want to go back and watch the next episode. Right. Or you have a bit at the beginning of like the beginning of Fight Club, where it sets up like there's a bit where he's got the gun in his mouth. It's like the most dramatic bit from like the whole movie. And you're like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And then they don't get back to that section again until like an hour and 20 minutes later or something like that. It's like, it's trying to get to, grab your interest and get you going to want to go, what's next? And I was thinking about it when I was setting up the interview for today, like writing out the questions. I was like, I should do something at the beginning of the episode. And I thought, oh, what we do actually, and everybody listening will have heard this, is that what we do is after we've gone through the whole and recorded the whole podcast, we then clip a section of it that we think like that was the most interesting bit, or maybe that was like a, you know, me asking you a question and then you starting to answer it and nearly getting to the most essential bit and then going, you know, and then you get into the podcast and it's like, oh, so that's the kind of thing that we try and do. So it's like, I think that we could probably be better at this, but that's the way one way we're using it. Another way we do it in our marketing is our email sequences will always be full of open loops. Like you'll start talking about something in one email that you'll finish talking about in the next email. So it's constantly like, how do you keep people kind of engaged and interested with it? And this is taking that same concept and saying, right, well, we're going to do the same thing with the training. Like, okay, start an interesting story or tell an interesting, you know, give them something interesting that you're then going to come back to later on. So everyone's like, oh, I want to know about that. I want to keep engaged. And it needs to fit. It can't just be some random joke. It's got to be something that helps to make the point overall as well.
I'll give you a little work example of this. One of the key things that I've learned was I always thought through my career, you know, I was alone suffering from imposter syndrome. Well, there's a Deloitte report that's recently come out where 70% of senior executives interviewed suffer from imposter syndrome. Or admit to suffering from imposter syndrome. It's probably a lot higher than that. Again, you know, it's got the attention because I thought I was alone, but actually here's a hard stat that actually brings the whole thing alive. And possibly you're wondering, okay, where's Quentin going to go with this? Well, later on, well, hopefully I'll close that loop later. But that stat in itself is quite shocking for a lot of people. Oh, I just thought it was me. And then this realization actually is the vast majority of people. It's particularly prevalent actually in the marketing community, but that's another story.
Interesting. Okay. So what's a few ways people, if they're listening and they're like, yeah, cool, I'm going to do that. I'm working on recording a course starting next week. I want to include this. So what's some of the ways that people can do this? Like you can grab the attention you mentioned with a stat or a story. Are they the two that you'd suggest or are there other ways of doing this?
It depends on the context. I'll mix it up, but I'll quite often use quite a pithy quote.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be relevant in whatever the topic that we might be talking about. So I know if let's say we were going to be assessing, I mean, in a marketing sense, you know, assessing the macro environment. So I might put up a quote, you know, from someone like Churchill, say the one thing we learn from history is we don't learn from history.
Was good at quotes, wasn't he?
And so straight away, you've intrigued the audience. They've got something quite memorable, but I think the other key thing here is that if you're teaching something that is possibly a little bit dry or difficult to remember, we will remember the story. We can attach the learning to the story. So if you've got an interesting quote or something which you can then loop back to as well, the messaging, the key learning will attach to that memory. And I'll human brains are wired to remember stories. And you think through human evolution, we've passed stories down through the generations. And that's been part of the cultures that were formed all around the world way before the printing press, let alone the internet. So stories are integral to humankind. So from a course construction point of view, use stories to your advantage. So you can use quotes, you can use data, or as I've just said, you can tell a story. So you might just be putting something into context and say, I was flying out to Zurich last week and I ran into, a 25-minute queue just to get through passport control. You think, okay, it's a fairly dull setup, but you're wondering what happens next. So those are the three main sort of tools. You can use others as well. But even, if you're not particularly adept at it, just a simple one, start, do a bit of research, come up with a stat, do a bit of research, really easy, find a quote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. So that's like a really basic starting point we've got so far. Okay, so you've got like a framework for like how you actually put the training together, which was the theorist, pragmatist, activist, reflector. Start with pragmatism, then theory, then the step-by-step for the activist, then the time for reflection. And we've got the spikes and loops. Start with a quote or a stat or a story that you're then going to finish off later on in the presentation. Love it. All right, cool. Straightforward to implement. What's anywhere else that you see people go wrong with this? Are there any other mistakes that you see people make that are kind of common when putting the training together?
Yeah, I think there's one really big one, and hopefully you didn't experience with it with me back in the day, but I know from designing Train the Trainer programs, this is a really common issue. And that is sharing a concept, maybe giving them a framework, but not showing them what good looks like. So, I mean, back in the day, remember we did, Boston Consultancy Matrix, classic two by two matrix. Oh, it's taking you way back.
It's a corker. Anybody who doesn't know the BCG matrix, you can make a lot of money if you understand the BCG matrix. It's a very big deal.
But the way that's normally taught is really dull. And they'll make reference to, typically in our world, fast moving consumer goods, but actually very few people work for Coke or for Diageo or any of those sort of big sort of brand owners. Most of us work for smaller businesses or consultants or in the B2B space. So a lot of those frameworks actually don't make sense. So one of the things that I've found is just really simple. If you are sharing a framework or a concept that you're trying to get across, populate it with accessible material.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give a little work example of this, John. A couple of weeks ago, I was over in Germany. I was working with a big med tech company and we were doing a session on competitor analysis. So fairly dry. It was fascinating and it's quite consistent with a lot of organizations, even the really big ones, is they're so fixated on doing their stuff. It's really a heads down mindset. They're not looking at the bigger picture. So they're not really assessing who their immediate competitors are, let alone who the competitors might be in 5 years' time. So we created a little framework. So looking at, okay, who might our top three competitors be?
Mm-hmm.
And then we would say, okay, what might their value proposition be? What are the channels they're using? All that sort of basic stuff, pricing strategy, et cetera. And that all seemed a little bit dry. So, and it's quite extreme. What I did to bring it alive when we got to the pragmatist bit and the exercises, the activist bit and doing the exercises, is I'd been using a sort of a theme through the training of coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
We all relate to coffee shops. And I put it into the context of, I live in Southwest London, a place called Clapham. And the 400 meter walk from where I live to the tube station, I have a choice of at least 15 coffee shops.
I was thinking, Clapham is a coffee shop heavy kind of place, isn't it? Yeah.
And that's excluding the big brands that we all know. Starbucks. They make coffee, really. But what I was trying to get across to them was that each one is trying to carve out a niche.
Yeah.
It has something unique and special.
Yeah.
So I set the story up about coffee shops in Clapham and me walking, to the tube. But actually what I did was to present a simple table showing if I was going to go into this marketplace, what would be the niche that I could occupy?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd identified a number of these sort of key niche players that I was going to be up against. And to actually understand what their value proposition, what their price point was, et cetera. Now, it seems we're going from a B2B context into just a coffee shop. the big learning for me was sharing them with them what actually a worked example could look like accelerated the whole process. Simply because they could relate to it, even at a very low level, but they could then say, okay, right, I understand it there, so I can now put it into my world.
Yeah. I'm very much like that. I always, in any training, I'm like, just show me an actual example. Because everybody's like talks about like, oh, conceptually it's like this, and this is the ideal, and this is how it all works. And I'm like, well, that sounds incredible. And to a point where I don't even know if I could ever reach that level. And then I see an actual example. I'm like, oh, I could do that. All right. Why don't you just like, so to me, I'm like always just waiting for like, when is the example coming up? So that sounds amazing. Okay. So someone wants to include this in their training. What's a way that they could do this? Let's say they're teaching people how to do dog training, something like this. Or is that too, yes, is that too straightforward to fit for this one?
I'm struggling here. I think, you know, if you've got, let's say, some video content of you demonstrating it, incidentally, as an aside, as I'm thinking about it, showing them actually how the mistakes that people make and how they go wrong, how to avoid those mistakes is actually another issue.
Yeah.
But I think if you're in a position, I think dog training actually is quite straightforward because you can demonstrate and you can actually talk your way through it and be actually responding to how the dog is reacting to your commands. And you could have a commentary looking at maybe your students. I'm literally thinking of the top of my head here.
Yeah,
the same principle that applies. You're showing them and talking about actually what's happening.
So you're going to bring it to life with like real practical examples as much as possible. Let's say you're doing something so you're talking about something that's like in a B2B marketing, it's more conceptual, it's harder, it takes longer, whatever to do than maybe like, okay, give a dog a treat when he does the right thing. But like, so therefore you need to take that into put examples that are really practical that they can relate to, and then maybe even go further just to make the point by doing something straightforward like a coffee shop. So if you're doing something that is difficult to understand, then how could you put in examples, case studies, bring it to life, give them an activity to do that, like give them the chance to actually try out doing it so that later on they can go and do it at a, you know, go and implement it themselves in their own business. Is that, have I answered right?
Yeah, that's an excellent summary. Yeah.
Okay, nice. I'm going to stop there in terms of going through all of these insights around it. I want to talk a little bit about like, if someone's interested in learning more from you. So a lot of people listening have never done formal marketing training. I'd say virtually all of them. That's sort of going to be my guess, right? Most people working in marketing haven't done formal marketing training.
It's over 80%. Yeah.
So there's clearly like some amazing insights people can get. And also you've got expertise around like, okay, the actually, how do you put this training together? If anybody's hearing this and they're really interested, what's any of the ways that people could work with you if they wanted to?
There's two main areas.
Okay.
So last year I set up QCO that you made reference to at the top of the pod. We've got three main activities that we do. One is training, but it's mainly in the leadership space. So I'm going to focus on the two other areas. Mm-hmm. One is coaching and stroke mentoring. So I provide support for a variety of business owners, consultants, SMEs who are just starting to get moving, and also some quite high flying executives. It's very wide ranging. The area that I think probably going to be most relevant to your community is the 20 years in the L&D space,
mm-hmm.
how to actually build a business in that world. And it's not easy because the rules are constantly changing. How do you create the right funnels? And that's obviously where your expertise that comes in. Mm-hmm. How can you scale the business? And understanding something so as fundamental as an escalating transactional framework. So how do you get people on board? How do you have your core products? How do you have a product that's then going to be relevant for maybe a client? So these people who want to buy more from you. And then how can you escalate it from beyond that? And actually how to map that whole process. I think most of us go into training and we've just got, I guess, going to fixate on the training. One of the things that I'm helping organizations do is actually understand how they can actually develop that escalating transactional framework so that they're thinking much longer term about where do they actually want to go with their business. So if you are interested in just having an exploratory chat, I think we've got details which are going to be circulating anyway, but you can email me directly at quentin@qco.uk or go to the website and you can set up an exploratory chat. Basically, it's a free coaching session, just see how you're feeling about it. And then the second area, which I think might be of interest, is the online community. There's a mastermind group, which I know, John, you've come along to one of our real in-person sessions. And this is where we bring together groups of people who are in a similar space, so SME owners, but then in a non-compete environment. We also do a group with consultants, and I have a corporate group as well. So this, if you want to experience actually how a mastermind works, and you saw it firsthand, the idea is that you're using the collective intelligence of a peer group to solve each other's business challenges. You know, you've been there, I've certainly been there, and I think most of the people listening to this, if you're running a business, it's quite a lonely experience, isolated for long periods of time. And if nothing else, sharing your challenges with people who have got similar issues, at the very worst, all you're going to do is get reassured that what you're thinking actually has some legitimacy. But at its best, you're going to be developing new ideas and new approaches. And what we're really trying to do with QU is enable people to overcome that sort of sense of imposter syndrome and stretch themselves out of their comfort zone and actually do something which they probably wouldn't do if they stayed working in isolation.
Okay. So two options. There's a mastermind with other people in a non-competitive industry who are going to give you feedback, insights, ideas. And the second one is one-to-one coaching with you. And the first step for that would be go to your site and set up a call or just email you. And the email address is Quentin@QUCO.UK. So Quentin@QCO.UK. If someone's interested in the mastermind, what's the first step for them? Is it still to give you an email or is it something on the website?
Yeah, so they, again, they can go onto the website. There's Eventbrite as well, and they can find us on QU. But they can then book themselves onto an online, effectively, we call it a strategy session, where, again, they have the opportunity of experiencing, and I think you had it, didn't we, when we did, there's a special issue process that we call it, where the subject does something really quite interesting in the way that they are engaged with the audience. And I'll probably leave it at that, but you probably
open a loop. Yeah. Beautiful. Okay. And I can say, like, Quentin's one of the few people who I go to for, you know, asking for insights about business overall. He's very, very high level understanding of business, has worked with much, much bigger businesses than mine, probably than yours, and kind of understands what's involved in growing and the overall marketing concept. So if you are interested in either of those, definitely go check it out. Drop them an email. I think that would be, you know, you could be very well served from that. So the website again was qco.uk, qco.uk, or the email quentin@qco.uk. If you found the interview useful and you want to get future episodes, please subscribe wherever you listened or go to datadrivenmarketing.co/podcast. Quentin, any final words you want to leave everybody with?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to close the loop about the 70% stat as well. And I think one of the things that a lot of people, and I suspect 80% of the people listening to this might be reassured to think, oh, this, you know, I'm suffering from imposter syndrome. And I just want to share this thought with you, which is that actually, if you are suffering from imposter syndrome, you're probably doing something right. The future of mankind is dependent on us taking ourselves out of our natural comfort zones. So if we're stretching ourselves to do something that's a little bit more radical than we're comfortable with, we're actually pushing the boundaries. And I'm going to leave you with this. Inevitably, it's an acronym, but it's a really powerful one. And I wish it was mine. It was actually from a guy called Dan Sullivan. But it's the four C's. And I'll just quickly go through it. The first C is conviction. You have to have belief in what you're doing has real value. And whether it's teaching a dog or whether it's better culinary skills, this is all about improving mankind or improving the richness of our experience. But you need to have some sense of purpose. And the fact that I think all of your audience have decided to set up business, they've probably got that nailed down. And it's much more than I just want to make money. There's something more significant there. So you have to stop the first C, which is conviction. The second C is courage. And we have this mistaken belief that in order for us to do anything meaningful, actually we have to be confident. But confidence is the byproduct at the end. Once we've had conviction, we have to be courageous, we have to do something, and then we have to keep on going when it gets tough, and that's difficult. So that's the second C. And then the third C is competence. So once inevitably, when we try something new, we're going to make mistakes, but we'll always learn something. We generally learn a lot more from our mistakes. The more we learn, the better that we get, and the more competent we become. And then finally, we get to confidence. And the confidence is a byproduct of conviction, courage, and competence. It is not the starting point. So there's this mistaken belief that we have to feel confident in order to do something. It is not. And unfortunately, we just have to get used to feeling comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Beautiful. All right. So conviction, courage, competence, and then finally confidence.
Correct.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Quentin, for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. And thank you to everybody for listening here today.
Thank you very much, John, for having me.